If your horse is a non-runner, you can get money back on all Cheltenham Festival races. Paddy Power.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Road to Cheltenham. Ruby is in position, I'm in position, and we're both looking forward to recapping what's happened in the last 7 days, looking ahead to the coming 7 days, and also talking about a few races that haven't so far come up with any great detail in these shows. Ruby, how are you?
I'm great. Did you yourself?
Very well, thank you. I'm very well. I was disappointed in the end with what happened with Envoi Alain versus Asturian Falange. We built it up last week, didn't we, as probably going to be the race of the weekend. And
there was nobody in Punchestown, but it still felt like you'd just pulled the plug on the place for the small amount of people that were there, and they were all racing professionals. But yeah, I think it was disappointing for everybody. Disappointing for Danny Mullins, Willie Mullins, Joan, Mary Donnelly. It was disappointing for everybody, and for the race, and for everybody watching in. We didn't get the spectacle we thought we'd get, but look, that's horse racing, and fences are there to be jumped. But look, we're going to look back at it, and I think it's set up pretty much like we thought it would, Lydia. Asturian Falange jumped out in front to go, getting receipt of £11. Went a good gallop around the bend, steadied a bit going to the first fence. Looks set to take off. Danny Mullins gives him the signal, and he doesn't. Goes to take an extra half a stride, doesn't have the room to do so, catches the fence and turns over, and race is over for him. I'm sure we can slow it down and look at it 100 times, but that's the way I saw it. And then what are we left with? Well, what do you make of Envoi Alain from there on? And I think we learned a lot about Envoi Alain. If you look at him, how settled he was. But then when they crossed the road past the stands, the loose horses in front of him are on his outside, up the fence four. He doesn't even look at them. He concentrates on the fence in front of him. Into the back straight to the eight fence, the same thing. He's looking at what he should be doing. But the loose horses cross in front of him then. And he has a little look to his right. Jack Kennedy only barely has to straighten him. Straightens it and pings fence nine. I loved how professional he was, his attitude. The loose horses didn't interfere with him. Into the home straight, what's going to happen? I mean, Field of Daria rides up on his outside. But every time Jack Kennedy asked for anything, the response was immediate. All the way down to the last fence, the loose ones are on his outside. But he keeps looking at the fence. Jack gives him a squeeze at the back of it, and the answer was emphatic. But I just loved how professional he was. I mean, there's people who ride horses the length and breadth of the country would love to have ponies with Envoi Alain's honesty.
Yeah, he was really professional, wasn't he? Really, really concentrated all the way through. I like the fact they're also heading towards the festival in the same kind of rhythm as they were successfully last year, so i.e. a run in early January and then straight to Cheltenham.
Yeah, it is. And look, I was talking to Gordon Elliott before racing on Sunday, and he didn't envisage Asturian Falange turning up to receive £11 off him. So I think he was a little relieved after. But look, we didn't learn anything more about Envoi Alain's ability with Asturian Falange falling. But we learned a bit about his character, and he's a very professional horse.
Yes, absolutely we did. Going into the race, Gordon was saying it wouldn't be a disgrace or worry him if conceding £11 to a horse as good as Asturian Falange, Envoi Alain was to get beaten. I thought that was kind of expectation management. But after the race, interestingly, Jack Kennedy said to Gordon that the horse's work might need to be upped. What do you take from that?
I think it's a very easy thing to do. I think you can always do more work with a horse. You can never do less. You can never take it back. And if they need to sharpen him up a bit, that's getting a bit more mature, a bit more relaxed. That is an easy enough thing to rectify, to work a bit faster, do a bit more. But you can never go the other way. You can never take back. So that's always something the trainer would like to hear.
Did you see something in the race that would make Jack Kennedy say that?
He was quite settled, but I think he had to make his own. He ended up making his own running, so he was bound to be settled in front. No, I think even with his response to Jack, when Jack asked him a little bit turning in, he quickened to get a length in front. And again, at the back of the last, when Jack asked him again, the response was immediate. I didn't see it, but Jack was riding him. It must have felt differently to him.
In my mind, I'm kind of writing off Asturian Falange this season as a novice chaser, possibly as a chaser. Just two runs now. And for me, the reason I'm saying that is he's obviously a horse of great talent, but those falls were inexplicable.
They were, but look, I think I've learned throughout my career not maybe to be as rash. And I made rash decisions like that and rode horses off that came back to bite me, and especially ones trained by Willie Mullins. I doubted Albion Ford was jumping. That's why one of the reasons I didn't ride him in a Gold Cup, he'd fallen at the last in Limerick. He'd fallen at the second last in an RSA with me. He didn't blow me away with his jumping in Tramore. Let lo and behold, he's gone and won two Gold Cups since. So I won't give up on him just yet.
There were some other races that stepped up to the plate over the weekend, though. I found the matchup between Next Destination, Fiddler on the Roof and Golden Fortune, just the three of them, but they were in an excellent contest at Warwick.
And they were, and it just showed small runners do make really interesting races, or can make really interesting races, sorry, not do make. But Golden Fortune, he jumped out a bit fiddly at the first, the Next Destination jumped past him, but not a whole pile changed in that race in Warwick then until they faced across to that famous strip of five fences on the second circuit. And I think you look, when they landed over the first one, how Harry Cobden had to squeeze Next Destination at the back of the seventh last. Again, at six out, how he's riding him away from the back of it to get him on the bridle. But a brilliant jump at the fifth last puts him in position A. Then Golden Fortune misses the third last. And this is where it gets interesting. Harry Cobden jumps by. He knows Fiddler on the Roof's behind on his inside. He moves forward and in. John Joe Jr. kicks through on the inside of Golden Fortune, but doesn't really want to get to the front. And there's the gap game of cat and mouse. Is Harry going to come all the way? And John Joe goes back. Harry comes in, and then John Joe sits to deliver his challenge at the right time, which was going to the last on Fiddler on the Roof, gets up sides, but Next Destination had gotten the rail, and his stamina kicked in, and he saw it out well. You know, people have said, would you like to see him travelling a bit better, maybe to win an RSA? I think that's just Next Destination. I think he's a very, very good horse. I think Fiddler on the Roof has decent form all year, and stepping up to 3 miles definitely didn't disimprove him. So Next Destination ran a really good race.
Yeah, I like the way he kept himself in the game with his jumping. I think that's always going to be really important in the top flight. Can you see any way that Fiddler in the Roof could possibly turn it around on in the Festival Novices Chase?
I don't.
No.
I don't. And then throw in Monkfish and maybe Latest Exhibition. And I don't. I don't. I think Fiddler on the Roof, to me, is just... I don't know. Did we expect too much from him? He won at Tolworth. That's probably his best novice hurdle performance. He just is what he is at the minute.
Moving on to hurdles and the Moscow Flyer Novices Hurdle, the real deal win, despite a whole string of reasons that Ronan McNally gave afterwards for why he probably wouldn't give his best running.
Yeah, and they were interesting to listen to. But if you look, if Ronan McNally can correct all that brilliantly. But this race was definitely relentless. Echoes and Rain was quite a free mare, jumps out in front, but look for fire attack. At the very back of the field. Donna Myler went to drop him in to try and settle him. But by the time he got to the second hurdle, Echoes and Rain is bowling along the front. But Fire Attack has basically pulled his way through the field with Donna Myler. But that ends up helping everybody else because Fire Attack becomes the one to bridge the gap. And I'm not sure if Fire Attack didn't run away, would they have ever got Echoes and Rain back? Because Fire Attack bridges that gap. When they face into the back straight at halfway, the first three home, Ganna Petit, Power of Pause and The Real Deal are the last three in the shot. But Ganna Petit and Power of Pause, between the three out and two out, go to chase down the ones in front. The Real Deal doesn't. He's flat to the boards. Dennis O'Regan just sits where he is. Good jump at two out. But I think maybe not chasing the race from the third last to the second last allows him to swoop down the outside in the home straight and pass them all. He definitely shaped to me, as Ronan McNally said afterwards, more of a Ballymore than a Supreme horse. He did get outpaced and he came at horses that were slowing down. But to the handicapper's credit, The Real Deal was 141. The third horse, Power of Pause, is 136. I think they've run to their figures.
Yeah, I was inclined to massively mark up Echoes in Rain, who did just far too much all the way through and yet still managed to stick on to some degree. I think Ganapathy, even though he was held on to just before the home turn, even so with the ways that panned out that way, I think that possibly was ended up being challenging a shade too soon. I think De Real Deal got the absolutely ideal ride. It made me think County.
Yeah, that would same 2 miles and one on the new track. Yeah, that could be ideal for him. It depends on what penalty he gets now and obviously how much weight he'd have to carry in the county. But County on the new course or the Ballymore on the old course. But he didn't look to me like a horse with the pace to win a Supreme. And I'm not sure there was a genuine grade one novice hurdler in there.
Yeah. Moving on now to Sky Pirate, who was a horse we didn't mention last week, but he has looked a different character since he's been dropped to 2 miles.
Yeah, look, he had plenty of knockers at 2.5 miles and 2 miles and five, and he was this, that and the other, but he surely showed his resolution here. Jumps the second last, goes to the last with an okay jump at the last, but does rally from the last home, or find from the last home to win. Look, he's won there off a rating of 152. He's off 140 in the Betfair hurdle. Mm. I think County for him. Mm. Yeah, obviously, if he goes to the Betfair and wins, that diminishes his chance in the County. But I think when you look at him, can you see him beating Shishkin or Andy Gurmeen in the Arkell? I don't think so. I think his handicap mark is there to be exploited.
Yeah, you mentioned the hurdles angle, and I really, really like that. That sort of switching between the two codes to see whether, you know, the handicap mark can catch up. And he's got that opportunity in the Betfair hurdle and maybe the County hurdle as well. There's the Grand Annual, if they fancy sticking in the handicap route over chasing at the Cheltenham Festival.
Yeah, look, I should know by now, but whatever penalty he got for the weekend, it's kind of a lot of weight in the Grand Annual.
Then one horse we did discuss was also running at Warwick, and that's Adramel. He was stepping up in trip to 2 mile 5. Trainer Tom Lacey also applied the first time cheek pieces, but he was ridden from the front by Richard Johnson.
Yeah, and I think the application of the cheek pieces really worked. I mean, if you watch it to the first hurdle, this is a competitive race. So many horses all up there, all wanting to have a go. And we roll it on a full circuit. When they come back through the start, heading to the fourth last, not very much has changed. There's Admiral is still in front and everything else is still snapping at his heels. He jumped 4 out really well. And when they pass by the second last fence, which is after the third last, make a Believer, Midnight River, they're all coming to have a go at him. But Admiral, to his credit, keeps at it. Jumped the second last well, got a bit close to the last, but finds plenty. And he hung on well, even though mint condition is chasing him down close home. I think Admiral was always holding him. And you're watching it thinking, yeah, tough performance, Albert Bartlett.
Yes. Tom Lacey was asked about the Ballymore and the Albert Bartlett afterwards. He was inclined to the latter with sort of spring ground, less testing ground. I tended to agree. I felt that a further step up in trip would be a positive thing for Adramel. I remain a massive Make Me a Believer fan. The horse that was third, not as a hurdler, but as a chaser next season.
Yeah, and he made a mistake at the last, so you could see why, and he travelled well. And I thought turning in, he was going to be the one to throw the challenge down to Admiral. He just didn't have the gear to quicken up. Yeah, but you could see him winning some really decent chases.
Yeah, and maybe they might go to Aintree with him en route rather than Cheltenham while he's in his novice hurdling season. Then there was also an interesting four-year-old hurdle. It saw the return of Yumdor, but he was up against Tihupo. Who do you think would have won had Yumdor stood up at the last?
Well, I was still in Willie Mullins when this race was on, watching it on my phone, Lydia, and between the last two, the way Yumador travels down with Paul Townley, I'm thinking, how far? And maybe the last 5 strides to the hurdle, you're thinking, he's going to have to work. Paul gives him a squeeze at the last, he steps into the middle of it between the top two bars and turns over, and that leaves Tihupo to win. I still think Yumador would have won, only not near as impressively as I thought watching it live the first time. I still think knowing the horse at home, he would have found from the back of the last, and that would have been enough to get him home. But I'd say the two decent juveniles, and with your love of these juvenile hurdlers, I thought I'd better give these a mention.
Yeah. I do find the division very interesting because horses can pop up quite late in the season. Gordon Elliott was with you. Instinctively, he felt that Tihupo had his measure got by Yumdor when the horse came upside. Robbie Power wasn't quite so sure, and I was just liking the way that Tihupo sort of dug in, and Gordon was saying that he sees this horse as a stayer more than a your immediate kind of juvenile.
Yeah, he did, and he beat Good Ball of in France. Good Ball is Paul Nichols, is that one in Newbury on the 29th of December. So we have a good enough line, or at least we know who the horses are. But yeah, Puppy's answer doesn't surprise me. Jockeys always think that we're going to win. Paul Towner probably thought he was going to win as well, but I have given that answer 1,000 times myself. Who'd have won? Oh, I'd have won, definitely. But like, who knows?
It's so true. That is the flaw in that point. Good Ball, by the way. Paul Nichols is thinking about exploiting his mark as a handicapper against older horses as a four-year-old. But back to Yumdor, that mistake at the last, it wasn't a surprise. Unlike Asteria Falange, there had been signs on the way round. His jumping isn't all that, is it?
No, and he was clumsy at the first. He jumped okay. It was definitely had been better than it had been in Goran Park, but jumping is just something that has to be worked on with him, and it will be
okay. Well, that was a quick fire roundup of what happened over the past week. Now, I'm delighted to say that we are joined here on Road to Cheltenham by Philip Hobbs. Philip, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very good, thank you. And you?
Very well, thank you. Very well. I wonder whether we could have a brisk gallop through some of your key horses that you might be running over the coming weeks, and starting very obviously with Defi de Soy, who you've entered and declared for the Clarence House at Ascot this weekend. It looks like a really deep contest this time round.
Well, it does. I must say, I was hoping for less runners and less competition, but there we are. It is what it is. So we'll crack on.
And tell me about him, because the last twice he's achieved less than you were hoping for. He ran fourth, well beaten in the Queen Mother Champion Chase. That was his final run of the season, obviously. And then he pulled up in his seasonal debut in the Schlur. What conclusions, if any, have you come to about those two runs?
Realistically, not a lot. Cheltenham in March, he was seen very flat tacking up and everything. And Barry Garrity rode him on the day and thought that he was really beaten after the first mile. The Cheltenham in November was a bit different because he travelled and jumped well, although he jumped the first two big, until coming down the hill. And Richard thought he felt in very good form, but for whatever reason, didn't finish at all. But we've done a sensitive test since, and he seems good.
So what do you do when you can't come to a conclusion? You do all the tests. They come back and they don't tell you anything. What can you do as a trainer at that point?
Watch him very closely. Wind him up for another race. And as long as there's no hiccups on the way in any way, then run again.
And have you had a smooth run to here?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, he's been good, you know. So we're hoping that we get the old Defi back tomorrow, or Saturday rather.
I've got a question for you from a viewer. His name is John Sharp, and he suggests, isn't there evidence in Defi's chase profile that he's arguably better over a longer trip? Why is he not being aimed at the Ryanair after such an impressive JLT win at the festival a few years back and some dismal efforts over 2 miles? Now, personally, I suggest that his 2019 Tingle Creek victory is his best performance, and that obviously is over 2 miles. But what's your take on the 2.5 mile question?
Well, he's won two grade ones over 2 miles. I always think that ground can make up to half a mile difference. So surely on very testing ground at Ascot, the moment you go 2 miles again. I mean, he will stay 2.5. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he won the JLT over 2.5. So it's just a matter of going in the races he's most likely to be performing at the top end in.
And so Ascot will inform what you do for Cheltenham?
Hopefully, yeah.
Do you have an inclination one way or another, whether you might be thinking, do you see him as more as a Ryanair type or a Champion Chase type at this stage?
He's in both. You know, both the entries have already closed. He's in both. And realistically, that's why he's in both. So we can decide after he's run. Every time you run a horse, you have a new plan. So, you know, I wouldn't want to even think about what we're going to do after Ascot until we see how we get on.
Okay, let's move on to Gumball, shall we, who was all set to win at Cheltenham until he took that tumble 2 out on his penultimate start. And then last time out, he was last to 4 in the Desert Orchid. What do you make of that?
So it was very disappointing. You know, he made a couple of bad mistakes at the wrong time, didn't get home, and definitely ran below par. He might well have a run over hurdles in February, either in the Betfair hurdle or in the Kingwell hurdle at Wincanton. And then we'll decide what we do after that. But I mean, again, he is entered the Arkle, but you know, we'll decide whether that's a possibility depending on his next run.
Road to Cheltenham viewer Scott Butler has a question about Gumball, and here it is.
Hi, Philip. Gumball has shown good ability over fences this season, but he's made some mistakes at critical moments in races. Would reapplying the hood help concentrate his mind a bit more, or would the hood not do that?
We used the hood in his hurdle races earlier on when he was extremely keen, and I don't think he probably needs that anymore now.
Okay. You've also got Oakley alongside him in the Betfair hurdle. Is that Oakley's plan? Because he was seventh in the race last year.
Probably, yeah. Providing everything goes all right in the next 3 weeks, I would think that's where you're likely to end up. I mean, it is possible to get balanced out, but usually in the race, a lot of those entries tend not to turn up on the day.
Mm. They've got quite plenty of options, haven't they? A few of the ones above him in the weights. And is he okay?
No, he's good. He's a good neck. He's fine. Yeah, all going well.
And the other horse amongst your novices I wanted to ask you about was St. Bart's, who's you've entered in the race that used to be the RSA and also the National Hunt Chase. This horse is improving all the time, isn't he?
Very much so. He's not had much racing, but each time he runs, he's put up a better performance. So we hope he's still on an upward climb, yeah.
Where are we likely to see him next?
When it dries up a bit. So, you know, who knows at the moment? I mean, obviously, this time of year, it's very difficult making definite plans when the ground is either really bad or meetings are off. So it becomes difficult to make a definite plan. So you just need to be more and more flexible, really.
OK. And I must ask you about Time Hill as well. You've taken the decision not to run in the Cleve en route to the Stayers Hurdle. What was the reason for that?
Well, he's always been a horse that... is not the most robust in that keeping condition on him is always been a bit of an issue. So therefore, he's had two fairly quick runs and he's performed great credit and he's fine afterwards. But I just think if he had a hard race in the Cleve, we're probably going to struggle to get him to Cheltenham in the best of order.
It seemed, well, Richard Johnson said afterwards that he felt the horse was idling in front. Is there anything that you can do from a trainer's perspective to help with that in future?
Not really. It's more about racecourse experience and he doesn't have that much of it, even though, you know, he was one of the top novices last year. So hopefully each time he runs, the experience he has is going to help.
And can you see him turning the form back round with Paisley Park? Obviously, he beat him at Newbury in receipt of weight and then he was beaten at Ascot. Can you see him being able to reverse that form?
You'd hope so. I mean, he's a horse which is he's only young and he's hopefully still improving. So, you know, whereas Paisley Park's obviously the other end of his career. So I would hope so. But, you know, time will tell, won't it?
Thank you very much, Philip, for your time. Thank you for asking my questions and also the viewers' questions. And we all wish you and the team the best of luck for the rest of the season. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Many thanks to Philip Hobbs for joining us here on Road to Cheltenham. And we'll be talking later on in the show about some of the horses he referenced there. But now Ruby and I are going to comment on a new race at Cheltenham. For the first time this year, Ruby, there will be a Grade 2 Mares Chase. It replaces what was the Northern Trust Novices Handicap Chase. It's run on the new course over around 2.5 miles. It's a Grade 2. It's not for novices, but novices might run. What do you think of it as an addition to the festival?
I think in time, like the Mayor's Hurdle when it started, I mean, if you look at the very first renewal of the Mayor's Hurdle, White Oak won it with a pretty low rating compared to what you need now. So I think over time it'll work. Will it be the greatest renewal of all time this year? Possibly not. But I think as it progresses and horses and owners and connections, horses are not going to realise it's there, but as owners and connections realise it's there, you will see more and more horses for it.
Yeah, that's why I wonder whether some trainers might be inclined to put a novice in this time around, because it might be more open than otherwise.
Yeah, it could. And look, we'll rattle through what we think could be there and we'll get to the novices at the end. But we'll start with the obvious one, which is Benny the Jew. Now, we haven't seen her over fences in quite a while. And the last time she won over fences or ran over fences was in February 2018. But for racing TV viewers, you did see her in Carlisle the previous December when David Mullins won her, rode her, and she won well that day. So we do know she can jump a fence. She was obviously second to Honeysuckle in the Mayor's Hurdle last year, but she would qualify for this. Another one would be Ellie May, and this is her winning in Thurles last year when she beat Cut the Mustard and Augusta Gold. She jumped the second last reasonably well, quickened up well down to the last, and she's a pretty decent mare. She holds an entry in the Horse and Jockey Chase in Thurles this Sunday. Mm-hmm. The obvious one that I like for it, but probably won't even line up, is Put the Kettle On. And here she is winning the Arca last year, jumps the second last in front with a good turn of foot. But if we roll it on 9 months, here she is showing all her stamina to beat Duke de Genève in the Schlur Chase. She wasn't good enough for Shaquen Poursois in Leopardstown at Christmas. And I think that she's this race written all over. They're Irish ones.
You know, I'm in You know I'm indulging you by allowing you to put the grade one winner, put the kettle on. The Arkle winner should be running in the Cream of the Champion Chase. I'm indulging you by talking about her in this context.
Yes, when I mean, you're standing in the number three, in the number three in Cheltenham, it's a lovely place to stand. Trust me.
In all seriousness, I'm sure she'll get an entry. Just coming back to Benny and Ellie May, how is Benny?
She's tipping away. She won't be running before Cheltenham, but fingers crossed, that's where you'll see her. She's a big mare. She's never had that many runs in her life, but she seems fine at the minute anyway, so touch wood, she'll stay that way.
I think I might be saying she has been entered in the Ryanair in the past. And certainly
she has, yeah. And the World Hurdle, and she's had plenty of entries. She's turned up in three Mayor's Hurdles, but, you know, would be very on Willie Mullins like to give a horse plenty of entries.
You said it. And Ellie May, she also is unbeaten over fences, and it'll be interesting. If she does turn up this weekend, we'll get a proper handle on where she is.
Yeah, and she also has an option of the Opera Hat in a couple of weeks' time, which is a Mayor's Chase and Nace. But she's in really good form. Was due to run recently, but that didn't happen. She's in great form. Put the kettle on Annie Mac. I might be one of the obvious English contenders. You can see her here in the Caspian Caviar when she was sneaking into contention. She made a bad mistake at the 13th fence, but she went to Doncaster since and beat Costa Mustard, who Ellie May beat. So that gives you a line on her form in Mayor's Chases. You also have Magic Alight, due to run an Ascot this weekend over hurdles, but we can see her win here in Newbury. Now, you have issues with her jumping, Lydia. You see her jumping the first fence in Newbury. It looked pretty good to me. The seventh fence in Newbury looks really good. Two out, three out, and the last. Her jumping and entry mightn't have been wonderful, but I don't see too much wrong with her jumping of park fences.
Yeah, it's a fair point. It's the National that I'm thinking of, where she barely missed hitting a fence and still managed to finish second. It was quite remarkable. She's obviously in there good ability. Sorry, Ruby, go on.
Yeah, no, that's the calibre of mare she is. So, and I think one is maybe slightly forgotten about because she hasn't really cut it in open chases of late, is Shattered Love. And we can see her here winning in Clonmel early in the season, where she beat Cabaret Queen, who had won the Kerry National. She's also another one that could run in this race, Cabaret Queen. Shattered Love obviously won a Mars chase back in 2018 under Jack Kennedy, but she showed her well-being in Clonmel when Mark Walsh showed her earlier in the season. They're the open mares. On the novice front, well, you have Colreevy. She's entered in Thurles this weekend as well, but we see her here in Limerick, makes a mistake at the second last. Danny Mullins gathers her up and she battles back to beat Pencil Full of Lead. On the novice front, she could face Yukon Nil, Scarlet Dove, Mount Ida and Rapid Response in Thurles on Sunday. But I think the one mare in the UK that caught her eyes this week as a novice was Dan de Campagna. She went there for her first run, only a two-horse race, herself and Cornerstone Lad. She made a mistake at the fourth fence, but on landing, she looks like she stands on her own foot and nearly trips herself over. But she rounded the bend in air to the fifth fence and absolutely pinged it. So the mistake didn't take anything out of her. She was very good at the fourth last, third last, and down to the last, she was brilliant. The fence she had made a mistake at. It was a really taken first run over fences. But I guess like Colreevy, trained by Winnie Mullins, and Damn the Campagna, trained by Nicky Henderson, neither have a big reputation for running novices in open company.
No, I think that's an important point to make about both of them. They like to keep their novices against novices. And Nicky Henderson said after the air success that he's scratching his head about where he might go. And he made the point that the Mrs. Paddy Power Mayor's Chase isn't for novices specifically. But I don't know, you could see them getting an entry and maybe seeing what it looks like nearer the time.
Exactly. But you're talking about the future of the race. And that's what you're looking at, is what novices you have this year to add to the mares we've already mentioned, like Benny, Ellie May, Put the Kettle On, Magical Light, and then you're showing this year's novices, and in 2 years' time you've got the novices coming on again and you eventually make a strong race.
Yeah, and I'm slightly torn by this race because I'm definitely wholly behind the initiative to have a fully coherent programme for mares, to encourage mares to be kept in training and to go through the ranks, not just run in bumpers and then, you know, be bred from, but to actually race as hurdlers and chasers, so that we actually understand more about 50% of the pedigree than we would do otherwise. And we are actually actively utilizing the horses that we've bred for the sport. At the same time, it's another race at the Cheltenham Festival, which potentially draws horses away from mainly the Ryanair, you would think.
Yes, but I sitting here trying to think of a female winner of the Ryanair Chase, and it just doesn't jump out at me.
I don't think it has been one, has there?
No. I can't think of one. I stand to be corrected. Please tweet us at Road to Cheltenham or email us at the Road to Cheltenham, whatever it is, and correct us if we're wrong.
What, and your PA will pick up the tweet?
You will, won't you?
Well, like any efficient PA, Ruby, I've picked up a tweet that I can pass on to you here for you answering the question.
It's good and awkward if you picked it up for me.
Well, certainly from here on in, they will be. This is from Faz at Fazareth 1, the first of the Fazareths. What do you think will happen with the amateur jockeys at Cheltenham, he asks? Will they make the likes of the Kim Muir for conditionals or open to all jockeys? This is as a result of the British Horse Racing Authority saying that amateurs can no longer ride in Britain, and that is to make sure that the way in which this sport is being run currently is compliant to the letter to the UK government's COVID restrictions.
I think it's kind of a wait and see, isn't it? It's, what, 7 weeks and 4 days to the festival, so that's 7 weeks and 5 days to an amateur-only race, so that's 49, 54, less two for declarations, 52 days before a decision has to be made. And I would, in my opinion, I would be leaving it until then, till you know exactly what's happening, before you would make any decision as to who will ride the horses in those races, if the amateurs cannot.
And in the meantime, hunter chasing carries on, but eligible jockeys will be riding those horses at race courses, and the weights will be adjusted to allow for that. So they'll be brought down from the heavier weights that are allowed for amateurs. And I think that's the right thing to do, because it enables that element of the sport to carry on. And if the landscape changes regarding COVID, that then the amateurs can be brought back in and it can carry on more seamlessly.
Exactly, because I mean, if you look at it, most of the horses the amateurs would ride in the Kim Muir and the National Hunt Chase, they wouldn't be riding all season anyway. So just keep continuing on. I think that's the step forward, and I would be leaving any decision that had to be made until the Monday of the Cheltenham Festival.
Okay, I'll move on to the next thing that we'll discuss, shall we? Which is this week we had entries announced for the Cheltenham Festival's four novice only events. So that's the Sporting Life Arkell, the Marsh Novices Chase over half a mile further, 2 mile 4, the Festival Chase, which used to be the RSA, and the National Hunt Chase, which is around about 3 miles 6 furlongs. So I just wanted to highlight some significant horses that have been entered in just one race. So this is quite important for punters in that they have some certainty at this stage that these horses will be heading for those targets. Shishkin, for example, is only in the Arkell, as are All Mankind, Captain Guinness, Felix Desgy, Gumball and Unaccepted.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only choice for them now. But look, I think it's clear for some horses where they're only going to go and what their targets are. And other horses, people are still deciding. I think with older horses, it's generally easier to know where you're going than it is with novices.
Chantry House and Shamblu are only in the Marsh. And interestingly, the Big Breakaway is only in the Festival. But Court Maid, who we discussed last week for the National Hunt Chase, isn't in that race. And she's only in the Festival. I was really surprised.
I'm glad you didn't put her up, Lydia.
So
money done in a week. Or you could back her with one of the firms that's going on run her money back, I suppose. But yeah, that was a surprise. I thought she'd be the National Hunt Chase, but she's only in the RSA, or the old RSA, the Festival Chase, sorry.
Yeah. And then we've got decisions for Arkell or Marsh for the likes of All Art, Darva Star, Enajamine, Franco Deport, Hitman.
Yeah, and I suppose it all depends, Lydia. I mean, were Shishkin to drop out of the Arkell and Enajamine drops out of the Arkell, all of a sudden it becomes a very different race. So I see why people double enter and triple enter, because until you know what actually is still standing and fitting well in a little over 7 weeks' time, you have to keep the options open. And I know it annoys punters. Well, why can't you just say where you're going? Well, you enter one in the Marsh and all of a sudden they all stand their ground and the Arkell falls apart and you're thinking, why wasn't I in the Arkell? And I think last year's Champion Chase is the classic example. Different people, and I know even with Keyless Emery, you took him out of the Champion Chase, went back to the Champion Hurdle because you thought it was a weaker race, and look what happened in the Champion Chase. Now, I know that's the benefit of hindsight, but I think you have to keep, I can see why all those horses have multiple entries, because this far out, who knows what's going to happen.
Just runs quickly through some of the headlines. Marshall Festival for Andy Dufresne, Monkfish, Paint the Dream and Protect a Rat. Surely Monkfish goes for the festival.
Yeah, but I mean, something has to go wrong with a lot of the horses in the marsh, and all of a sudden another horse crop up for Willie Mullins in the festival chase, whereby he thinks he could win both. But I can't see him in the marsh.
Yeah, no. Festival and National Hunt Chase for Dickie Diver. We were talking last week that maybe Dickie Diver doesn't quite have that really gnarled profile for the National Hunt Chase. And Pencil Full of Lead is in the National Hunt Chase and the festival, but not in anything else.
Yeah, and he'd be an interesting runner in the National Hunt Chase. He would definitely bring quality to that. He has 3 runs over fences thus far. I'd imagine he could get a 4th in, so he'd be bordering on the right profile. Not quite the amount of runs, but he'd be getting there.
I've got a confession now. I've put up Pencil Full of Lead for the festival, Novices Chase.
Now that he's entered.
Yeah, yeah. I really like him for a 3-mile trip. I wouldn't really like him for the National Hunt Chase. I've also, you know, this is one for you to rubbish. I've also put up Darva Star each way for the Arkle, just because he's got the right profile in terms of his level of hurdling form. And I think you can argue that he was the best horse in the race where he was defeated by Franco de Port, because he was in the teeth of that overly strong race for much longer than the actual winner.
Yeah, he was. And even if you look back at that race and you look at the 5th fence and the spread that's on the field, and you look where Darva Star is just behind Felix Dejé, and you look to where Franco de Port was, he takes it off Felix Dejé with over a mile to race. So yeah, he was in the heat of that race every step of the way. So if you're a times and sectional person that you proclaim not to be, you could easily mark up Darva Star's performance.
Yeah, I think you would. I think the eye would as well. I don't think you needed to crunch the numbers really to see that that's the way that race panned out. Right, Chatham Street Lad has now got 5 count 'em choices, and there will be yet more, because I think they're thinking about heading towards a handicap, aren't they? 4 choices for Royal Beguile, Fusel Raffles, If the Cat Fits, Latest Exhibition. They're all got 3 options in the novice chases. That's just a case of trying to think where you've got the best slot. But it also says that, you know, I'm not confident that I can turn up in my chosen race and win it, doesn't it? I'm thinking about Latest Exhibition here.
Yeah, but like, you're thinking, can I beat Envoy Allen? Can I beat Monkfish, who's already beaten me? That's before you get to the English horses. And if the Arkle crumbles, could I possibly just outstay them in that? So yeah, again, it's the same argument all over again. If the cap fits, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up over hurdles myself. And Fusel Raffles, yeah, I mean, what is his best trip? I don't know. Maybe Nicky Henderson does, but it's hard to know.
2 horses entered in the Arkle and the Marsh are yet to make their chase debut. One of them you know well, that is Classical Dream, and the other is Harambe of Alan Kings. Tell me about Classical Dream.
He's back on the go. He tweaked a muscle just before Leopardstown. He was declared to run, and he's tipping along. It'll be a well chief out for him, won't it? One run in Cheltenham. But look, his schooling had been brilliant, and I think he's a good jumper. I think fences would really suit him. So touch wood, we can get that run into him. Harambe won Greatwood, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, could be a better chaser. Be interesting to see what Alan King does with him.
Yeah, it's the late, late show though, isn't it? There's another one as well, chief, as well. There's a Western Warhorse.
Moving on.
I still don't actually believe that happened.
Funnily enough, neither do I, but if I look at my bank account, I know it did happen.
I only had one who moment when I was looking over all of these entries, and that was a horse called Saint Turgeon, who's trained in France by David Satalia. He's a winning hurdler. He's yet to make his chase debut. David rode once in Britain, as I can see, as an amateur back in Nottingham in 2011. But that's the only one really left field entry that I could find amongst all of the various entries for these 4 races.
Yeah, and a French hurdler wouldn't bother me going chasing with him at all. I wouldn't. Someone said to me he can ride a first timer in the Arkle. If he had form over fence over hurdles in France, I'd be willing to have a go. Well, not now, when I was riding.
You said last week that you'd actually rather ride a hurdler going chasing in Britain, a French train one, than a French chaser going chasing.
Definitely, yeah.
And then 3 horses that were not entered at all that I was expecting to see their names at least. Messi de Zobo was one, but I rang Alan King and he said that they never planned to head to Cheltenham. They feel with a horse that's had a leg injury, all that upping and downing and constantly turning, he'd rather go to the Scilly Isles, where there are lots of horses heading there, and then on to Aintree with a horse like that.
Yeah, well, he's gone to Wincanton with him twice, which is dead level, so it backs up what he's saying. Messier, Desobo, yeah, of course it does. Running up and down hills, it's no different than a human. It definitely puts more pressure on your limbs. So I can understand that argument. The big getaway picked up an injury in Leopardstown when he won. And he won't be going. And Elixir Dane, I haven't come across him in quite a while.
Right, okay. They were the other two I was going to talk about. So the big getaway problem since last time. And Elixir Dane, who we haven't seen since last season. He ran in the stream.
I think he's out, yeah.
Okay, so those are the headlines from the novice chase entries for the Cheltenham Festival that were made this week. Now, I'm performing a bit more to type as your PA here, Ruby, in that I'm picking up a message that was left for you.
You didn't take that joke well, did you?
What do you mean?
You didn't take that slagging at all, but moving swiftly on.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah.
Innocent face. Anyway, at Winning Marks has been in touch, and he was in touch just after Patrick Mullins was on the show. So I'm bringing it to your attention now. And he said, maybe not the most glamorous race at the festival, but some week, can we get a segment on the champion bumper? Looks a very exciting renewal this year. So I thought we'd do a segment on the champion bumper. What do you think?
Right. Well, it was, we'll have a go. It was first run in 92. So I made that 28 editions, 21 of them won by Irish horses, 7 won by the UK. So I rustled up what I knew of the Irish form. And the obvious place to start was with Sir Gerhard. And we can see him winning here in Navan, where he beat a horse called, let's be clear about it, of Gavin Cromwell's. Now, let's be clear about it, was a dual winner. He had beaten Ennis Kerry at Tipperary and at Punchestown. Sir Gerhard had beaten the Bangor Doyle and Down Royal before this, and he's quickened up really well to beat let's be clear about it. He's the form horse, no doubt about it. Betting wise, Kilcrut is in the betting as well. He is one from two. He beat Killer Mode at Navan, but Killer Mode was only fifth in Leopardstown since. And prior to that, he had finished second to Captain Kangaroo, who's not from three over hurdles, when he won a bumper at Clonmel. The other one of Gordon Elliott's of interest was Chemical Energy. He won back in Down Royal in October when he beat on Eagle's Wings. Now, when Eagle's Wings had beaten Stackler in a bumper and beat Captain Kangaroo last week in a maiden hurdle, he quickened up really well in Leopardstown in Down Royal to beat on Eagle's Wings. Prior to that, he had won at Roscommon when he beat Champagne Socialist, who was second to Grangey in Galway after. The second one of Willie Mullins's is Ramelez. He was fourth to Risk Factor at Christmas 2019. You see him here in Leopardstown quickening up really well to beat Tuscan Train at Leopardstown. He's a point-to-point winner, but he's not from three on the track. And the third one of Willie Mullins's that I like is a mare called Brandy Love, who we see here beating Presenting New York in Ferry House. She'd never ran before and hasn't ran since, but I thought Brandy Love was really impressive. You can throw in Take Tea and Hollow Games as well if you want to add more Irish horses. They could be equally as good. Hollow Games beat the Bangor Doyle as well. But there have been four mares to win the race. Fiona, Relegate, Total Enjoyment and Muckamag. Only 3 4-year-olds, Q Card, Dado Star and Muckamag. So my question to you, Lydia, is can Eileen Dover be the first British 4-year-old filly to win the race?
As I understand it, they are not even thinking about Cheltenham, are they?
I mean,
it's possible she might get an entry. Those entries come out quite late compared to other entries, race. But they were talking about the Aintree bumper for her, and I can see that. And she looks to me very, very sharp and probably even worth trying the flat.
Yeah, she looks really quick. Really good performance of Margaret Reza from her last week. William Mullins' ground, she was third. And as I said, her form ties in with different horses back in Ireland. So, I think there's a couple of really good bumper horses there. But William Mullins and Gordon Elliott have won two each of the last four renewals.
I have to say, bumpers, I really enjoy going to the paddock for the champion bumper and other sort of significant bumpers where you've got all of these good horses collected together and getting to know what these horses look like for their future careers. But in terms of following them through to that point, it's not really for me. And as you've just done, I mean, you spend hours picking out, you know, this mistake here and what the jockey did there. And presumably there you've just gone quickened as you've gone through the list.
I have, because what else can you tell? That's it. Like, did it quicken up to two, Paul? All of those did. But I don't know. I find it like trying to figure out 2-year-old form, tell you the truth. Yeah. Which is the best maiden? I don't know. Put them in together the second day and we'll figure out which is the best one. But after they win once, I find it very hard to tell.
Willie Mullins likes to run 85,000 of them. And how does he? Can you give us some insight as to, you know, the process of how he comes up with his short list there, or rather long list?
I think enter everything that's qualified, then chat to each of the jockeys as to which one they ride, and then see how many spaces he has on the horse box.
And has it ever surprised you, horses that have turned up from his yard? That
Joe Cullen, Charlie Swan. I think there was a space on the back of the lorry, and that's how he got himself to Cheltenham. Briar Hill was 25-1. Look, and there's plenty we fancied, and it's not always the obvious one. This year will be different. I think with no crowd at the festival, I think it'll be much easier for the bumper horses. In years gone by, the whole occasion has been too much for plenty of bumper horses.
And at the same time, though, don't you then find out which horses can take it? You know,
exactly. It's not all about today. There's always the future.
Yeah. So there'll be some unanswered questions, I think, about some horses that, you know,
yeah,
encounter potentially in this environment.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. Well, winning marks. I hope that you think that we eventually got round to talking about the bumpers. I'm sure it'll come up again between now and Cheltenham. Now some time for some, you know, analysis of jumping and that kind of thing, not just horses quickening, a bit of both. We're going to look ahead at the key races from the weekend. We have got a really good edition of the Grade 1 Clarence House at Ascot, Ruby. It involves Defi de Soy. We've heard from Philip Hobbs earlier in the show about his chances, and he's got to redeem himself after two lesser runs. Flip side is Politolog, who's flying high at the moment.
He is flying high at the moment. And I suppose the interesting thing from the Politolog point of view is Harry Cobden is back on. Now, we'll pick him up here, winning the 2017 Tingle Creek with Harry Cobden. He's a slightly darker grey back then, but jumps the pond fence really well, round to the second last. But look, prior to winning this Tingle Creek, Politolog had won the Holland Gold Cup, ridden by Sam Twiston Davis. Harry Cobden, who had won on him well before that, got back on and he bolts in the Tingle Creek for him. And roll it on a couple of years, and you have Harry Skelton riding him. It's a 2020. Harry obviously won the champion chase on him, but is there much difference? Yeah, he's a bit lighter grey and probably not travelling as strong, but the result or the outcome is still the same. Now, obviously, Connections wanted to whoever rode him in the Clarence House to ride him in the champion chase, but as shown in the past, I don't really think that's necessary, because Harry Cobden hadn't ridden him in the Holland Gold Cup when he won a Tingle Creek on him. And at the moment, Harry Skelton seems to be knocking a really good tune out of him. Personally, I'd let Harry Skelton have a go on him in the Clarence House, keep a winning partnership intact. And if he couldn't ride him in the champion chase, so be it. But that's not my call. And look, they've made the decision and Harry Cobden rides him.
It must have happened to you at some point.
Of course it does. It happens to everybody. But I can see it from probably from both sides. But to me, it was always worry about today and let the next day look after itself. And for at the moment, Harry Skelton was the one who knocked the tune out of him in Cheltenham and in the Tingle Creek. I'd have been worried about the Clarence House first and then worry about the champion chase.
Okay. Politolog, different horse. The hood has come off. Positive tactics. They've done a few different things at home. They've given him space between his races. And Paul Nichols is saying that he thinks the space from the Tingle Creek to the Clarence House is enough.
Yeah, look, it should be. I mean, the Tingle Creek is early December. We're now well into January. But if you go back to 2019 and look at the opposition, here's Defi de Soy and waiting patiently well in front of Politolog, but he does have the hood on him on this occasion. And Defi de Soy is chasing down under, so waiting patiently away from that pond fence. He's quite close. But when they get to the second last fence and there's an injection of speed, under so and Defi de Soy quicken away from waiting patiently, who jumps the last well and eventually runs them down on the stiff uphill finish. Now, obviously, in Ascot, you climb from Swindley Bottom to the home turn, but the straight isn't that stiff in Ascot. Mm-hmm. It's the climb is much earlier. And having watched waiting patiently in the King George, I think he's just lacking. I don't know that he still has the speed for this distance. Politolog sets the standard, but that Defi de Soy that we watch win the Tingle Creek, if he can reproduce that, there's a couple of bad runs since, but if he reproduces that, he'd be the one to give Politolog a race.
Yeah, I think that's a career best performance from Defi de Soy winning the Tingle Creek there. And it was an end-to-end tag team type gallop. Onua was there. And then when Onua had cried enough, Under So took over. So it was a really strongly run affair, which saw Defi de Soy in such good effect. But that's what allowed waiting patiently to get so close as well.
It probably did. And it'll be interesting to see what Harry Cobden does on the front end on Politolog.
up against them, a couple of left field ones. Fanyan Destreval, who's a horse I'm a big fan of, but he hit the deck in the Peterborough, which was rescheduled to Cheltenham last time. He's got that, again, that low slung French style way of jumping. I think he'll be better suited to Ascot than Cheltenham, perhaps.
He might, but when you turn away from the stands in Ascot, the first and second fences are taken at as steep a gradient as any fence is in Cheltenham. So they'll come early in the race. Maybe that could be a help to him. But he was travelling really well in the Peterborough. And you can see him there crumbling over and landing with Charlie Deitch, who has gone there instead of going to the Peter Marsh and Haydock. So he obviously fancies him as well. And you have one more, Lydia, to put up. First Flow.
I just want to mention First Flow because he is progressing through the ranks. Castle Chase, though, was a bit... Well, I mean, there were lots of fences taken out. He wasn't really travelling. He made a few errors. I just think he's going to be up against it in proper grade one company here at Ascot.
I agree.
Fair enough. So what do you think the final result here is going to be?
Little Ogg's the farm horse. And I guess the interest everyone has in it is, will Deffy bounce back?
Yeah.
And then if he does, it's either whichever one can then go forward to take on Shaq and Bourgeois. And we'll all hope Altio wins the game spirit. We might get the race we didn't have last year.
That would be nice to think, wouldn't it? Same day, we've got our fingers crossed that despite extensive rain across the country, particularly in the north, and waterlogging of the track earlier in the week, that Haydock does go ahead. Because if it does, there are some significant races to be run there. Notably, the new one, Unibet Hurdle. Just the three horses entered, but one of them is the dual champion hurdle winner, Bouvardeur.
Yeah, and it's so long since we saw him, and I wrote it down, 420 days since he picked up that injury in Newcastle. Now, if you look back, you can see him here winning the champion hurdle with Barry Geraghty in 2018, and he looked to have... He was a dual champion hurdle winner, and you were thinking, God, what's going to beat him next year? 2019, hurdle past the stands, he's too far off, it catches the top bar and turns over. That was the end of his 29 season. And then he goes to Newcastle and he picked up that injury and we haven't seen him since. Now, if he's going to be in the shake-up in the 2021 champion hurdle, I think he has to win in Haydock. What he's taken on Navajo Pass, who we saw winning in Musselburgh in his last start of Donald McCain's, jumped out handy without making the run in Musselburgh, a sack kind of just behind the pace, but did jump to the front at the fourth hurdle. So he will be on the pace, I think. And he had last year's winner, Bally Andy, who we saw battling back to beat Pentland Hills last year. I mean, looking here, you think, wow, how far is Pentland Hills going to win? Then all of a sudden he gets empty and Bally Andy battles back at him. To win the race, Bally Andy and Navajo Pass are going to be playing a fitness stamina card. And then we'll see what Bouvardeur does.
Yeah, I think it's really set up perfectly because I think both of them are staying two-milers. They both get further. They like to get stuck in quite early on. And that should allow a top-flight Bouvardeur to cruise in behind and pounce late. So it's the perfect setup.
I think it does. But like Bouvardeur's last two starts, a fall and an injury through jumping, you know, it's a test for him. We'll see how he jumps as well.
It is. I don't think he was the season where he ended up tipping up in the champion hurdle. I don't think he jumped.
I have to correct myself. You know, his last two runs, he won in the middle in Punchestown. David Russell won on him, of course, at Punchestown after he fell in the champion hurdle. So, but look, jumping, it still caught him out in his last start.
It's very honourable of you to raise that. I'm going to move you back in the card at Haydock to the opening novices chase because I'm really interested by this race. It's got All Art in it, who I really liked, Ascot, Silver Hallmark, who split Sporting John and Fiddler on the Roof at Exeter, and also Maroon for Nicky Richards and Trevor Hemmings.
Yeah, I think Maroon is the one I'm least familiar with. Silver Hallmark, of course, we saw in Exeter and gave Fiddler on the Roof a real scare. It looked like beating Fiddler on the Roof, jumped the last and had to go at him, but Fiddler on the Roof just found too much and repelled his challenge. But that's a fairly high level of form. We saw Fiddler on the Roof against Next Destination last weekend, and then obviously Alert. Now, he won well in Ascot when he beat Fiddler on the Roof, so Fiddler on the Roof seems to be tying in all this form. But we'll see him here in this last year's Supreme, where he jumped into a good position at the third last under Sean Bowen, or second last even, just didn't have the pace to quicken from there up. But he did finish between Asterion Forlange and Edwardstone. Edwardstone won well in the Market Racing last week, and we've already touched on Asterion Forlange. So Allard can run to a pretty high level, and it will be interesting to see how he gets on.
Right, so that's the key events in Britain on the Saturday. Moving on to Ireland on Sunday, we've got Thurles and the Horse and Jockey Hotel Chase, and it features a certain Alaho.
Yeah, Alaho's in here, and obviously he's two runs this season, and we couldn't see the race in Punchestown, so we don't really know what happened there. And then the last day in Leopardstown, he just didn't. It was 3 miles, but I'm going to pick him up, Lydia, in last year's RSA, and he goes to the first just beside Manila Indod, kind of two of them vying for the lead. Manila Indod jumps past him, but when he lands, watch out, Alaho races up past Manila Indod and into the lead. And I think that set his tone. I don't think Paul Townend ever really got him to settle away from the third fence when he lands. See Paul trying to take him back. The same at the eighth where he's tugging him, and he's always wanting to go a stride faster. He made a mistake at the 12th. But even when you roll it on to the 14th, he still hasn't got him to switch off. And at the 16th, he's still running a bit keen. This is a long way into the RSA. Then obviously Manila Indo comes at him going to the second last, where they both quicken away from Champ. Alaho makes a bit of a mistake at the last. Neither are brilliant, and he just doesn't stay. I think he's dropping back to a trip. Now, Thurles will be sharp for him, but I think he's dropping back to a trip that might suit him, whereby you can use his jumping and let him gallop. No slowing him down at any stage. Jump out and let him absolutely, just let him flow, let him roll. Now, in against him on Sunday, you'll have Backison, who sets a fairly high standard. Backison made all to win the Clonmel Oil Chase, David Mullins rode him, but early in the season, I'm not sure how competitive it was. Keelis Emery cruised up to him down to the second last, but Backison had way too much for him. And battle over Dayoon is in there as well, whom we couldn't see in the John Durkin. But if you go back to Down Royal, away from the third last fence, he quickens up to easily put easy game and Sam Crow out of their comfort zone. So I think there's a relatively high standard, but just looking at it, the fact Willie hasn't entered Alaho in the Irish Gold Cup either.
Yes.
He's going back to 2.5 with him in the horse and jockey. To me, that might signal he could be going for, he's contemplating the Ryanair or the intermediate distance. Now, I don't for 1 minute think he's as fast as Min. He's not. But I think he's a galloping 2 mile and five horse. And I think a 10 to 1, Lydia, I'm going to recommend him each way for the Cheltenham Festival in the Ryanair.
Say that again.
I'm going to put him up for the Ryanair each way. I don't think he's as fast as Min, but I think the race will really suit him.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is an antiverse selection from Ruby Walsh. Interesting. I think Alaho has to be winning at Thurles, you know, beating that level of opposition if he's going to be winning a Ryanair. Have you seen signs at home that he has significantly come on from the Savills Chase?
I have, but also I think if he wins on Sunday, he could be 5 to 1. And seeing as I've missed the boat with most prices, not going to miss this one.
I was being polite. It does totally check. If he runs in the Ryanair, it totally changes how potentially that race is going to be run, because last year Paul Townend was able to a large degree boss it with Min. He was dictating the tempo of that race. He won't be able to do it with Alaho there if he's ridden in the way that you suggest.
Yeah, but Min is a faster horse and could be able to boss Alaho. So I'm taking it a little bit by chance here that 2.5 miles will actually be the right trip for him, I'm guessing. But I just think, and if you want to go 8 to 1 and take none or no bet with other firms, you could do that as well. But I just think if he wins on Sunday, he's going to be a good bit shorter than what he is today.
And I suppose that therefore your Min Alaho, which one wins out, comes back to what we were discussing about the Ryanair earlier in this series. And that is, it depends on how many of which type of horse turn up to help the other one along.
Exactly. And, you know, there's plenty of horses in that Ryanair that you could easily make the same case for. St. Calvados being one of them, who was second last year. But I just think that's where there's might be a bit of value. I've succumbed to the pressure, peer pressure that I've been under to nominate a horse for the Cheltenham Festival, so I have wilted.
I'm delighted to hear that. I'm delighted that under pressure you have managed to give of your best. That is positive for the rest of the season. We're not leaving it at one though. You can assure me of that, can't you? Because you know I've thrown out two just in this episode.
You have, yeah. Don't worry, Lydia. I have also learned since I stopped riding and have the occasional bet now that just throwing out tips is no good. It hurts so much when you lose money.
How are you doing?
Brutal.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's why you should watch Reg Cheltenham every week. Ruby, thank you very much for your thoughts. Thanks everyone for watching. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
If your horse is a non-runner, you can get money back on all Cheltenham Festival races. Paddy Power.